Before we get to this week's Wiggle Room Through Time on Rob Has a Podcast, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, our friends over at BetOnline. Currently, no NBA, NHL, or MLB. You might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. If you're into entertainment betting, you can still bet on stock prices, the weather, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, and NASCAR is back. They're all open 24 hours a day and all online. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus. Visit betonline.ag and don't forget that promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Check it out.
Josh.
Yeah, that's right. Rob Cicerino back with Josh Wiggler for a Wiggle in Time.
Okay. I just wanted to get onto this podcast. Excuse me, guys. Could you just all quiet down for a second? Hey, how's it going? I don't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted you to know that it's not beef jerky. Wasn't eating. It was just a blade of grass that I smushed up in my mouth before we got on the podcast here. That's all that it is.
Yeah.
You sure? Like my blue shirt and khakis.
Because I could have sworn, like right before we came on, I saw you just like, it appeared to be like a giant Slim Jim that you were just wolfing down.
No. I was snapping into a blade of grass, not a Slim Jim.
Yeah.
It's just a blade of grass. That's all it was.
I smell, I mean, I know we're podcasting in different locations, but
you
I'm picking
smell
up
the
like
spicy
a
meat breath.
Cured meat scent.
That would have been the move, by the way, right?
Let me smell it's your like, breath. Yeah,
yeah, let me smell your breath.
Lucina out there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Lucina would have smelled his breath.
Lucina would have
been
said,
it.
Yeah, let me smell your breath. Come here.
Yeah. I mean, like on any day of the week, with or without the beef jerky accusation, she would have been asking to smell the breath.
Maybe that's what she was doing to Tyson in Winners at War.
Yeah, did you have beef jerky? Did you sneak it out here? Let me smell your breath.
Yeah. Okay.
Could be it.
All right.
Smart.
So we are going to talk through everything from season 2, episode 2. If you're just joining us, you've missed us last week. We are doing this all summer long. Our summer project is we are going through
time travel, an
episode a week through time with Marty and Jimmy T, and we are going through different points in the space-time continuum of Survivor, but we are going by episode. In last week, we watched an episode 1, the Borneo premiere. This week, we watched an episode 2, which happens to be the second season. Next week, we'll watch an episode 3 until we get all the way to the finale, where we will rewatch the finale of the original season. But all through this summer, on Mondays, Josh and I will be going back and we'll be doing a wand off about each episode through time.
Oh my God. Yeah, I think time travel is a desired capability right now. So we don't quite have the technology yet, but we do have the capabilities to hop through Survivor history.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
Yeah, and Josh, before we get rolling today, I just want to mention I had last week that there was with everything that was going on, and I wanted to highlight a portion of Bryce Isaiah on the Purple Pants podcast that Bryce had some moving commentary about the whole saga with George Floyd. And I thought it was such a emotional piece that he put out there in his latest episode of the Purple Pants podcast from last week. So I had reposted that in the main patron or the main podcast feed for everybody to hear. Basically really tried to just amplify what Bryce was saying on his podcast. And at the end of that podcast, I had let people know that I was making a donation to Campaign Zero in the amount of $846 to symbolize the 8 minutes and 46 seconds that George Floyd could not breathe. And I had asked people in that podcast to if they would like to make a contribution, make a donation, and let me know about that. And if you guys can match me, I will donate a second $846.
That's awesome.
And
amazing.
I just want to let people know that we passed over that threshold. I made that second contribution, the second donation to Campaign Zero, which is helping to review police practices. And they have eight things that can be looked at, and in a relatively quick amount of time, if they enact these practices, can lower the chances of police violence issue 72%. We have raised over $4,000 this week for Campaign Zero. So
that's incredible. That's great. That's great. RHAP community is incredible. Yeah, that's an incredible thing.
That was really great. That also does not even include that this past week also Taryn Armstrong did a Twitch stream with Amon Adwin. I believe that they raised over $4,000 as well.
And it's incredible.
Over $4,000 to Campaign Zero. So I'm sure there's a lot other contributions, donations that were made that we don't even know about. So I just wanted to highlight that at the start of the show.
I love that. I'm very happy to hear that. I think that is people will amaze you. People can amaze you. It's hard to even respond to that. That's incredibly touching and great. And I thought Bryce was, as usual, amazing. I think a few people can like have the art of just like going off into a microphone uninterrupted for 20 minutes and like have that be compelling listening. And I think Bryce could do that about any subject, but something that felt very lived in, something that he was speaking about very passionately from the heart. My wife and I listened to that and we were both, very moved by it. So that's an incredible thing that you guys have done. I'm really impressed. I'm really personally touched by that as well.
Okay. All right, Josh, let's, fire up the flux capacitor and let's punch in our time circuits to head back to, it was January or was it February of the year 2000. Let's go. Let's 2001. 2000. Let me get
2001.
Right. We don't want to miss the wrong date.
I feel like maybe there's already some time travel cross wiring.
I believe
occurred.
It was the first week of February of 2001.
Yeah. Rob, can you pull the DeLorean over? I think we want to check the engine.
It sounds like
I think it sounds like the vehicle is about to kick. Mm. About to kick it.
Yeah.
So, not in the way that Michelle and Wendell used
some
to.
Some primo didgeridoo here in
there
Survivor
is some,
Australian Outback.
Love that didgeridoo. I didgeridoo will. I'm a big fan of the soundtrack that you're hearing here as we're going back to the Outback for 1 week only. Yeah.
Okay, so this was a all-time week in Survivor history. Q Jordan Kalish, because the Survivor, the Australian Outback premiere comes after the Super Bowl between the Giants and the Ravens. The 2000 Ravens end up winning. Really not a close game. I remember being at a Super Bowl party and Viv like, all right, come on, Kerry Collins, let's move things along here and let's crown the Ravens and let's get to Survivor, the Australian Outback premiere. Then Survivor is going to jump time slots from Wednesday to Thursday for season two, where it would remain on Thursdays all the way up until Survivor Nicaragua, speaking of time travel.
For a very long time, yeah.
Yeah. And so then we would get basically two episodes of Survivor in 5 days.
That is not abnormal to Australians.
Yeah,
we're used to this.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So they would set the tone there for what Survivor would be like involving Australia. Of course, Deb Eaton voted out at the first tribal council. These previously ons, when you're jumping around through time, I feel like, Josh, do set the stage where if we were going to, like 20 years from now, go back to season 40, no previously on, we might be lost.
That's tough. I think for the DVD, they're going to want to have those previously ons because we were able to, you know, we didn't watch the first episode of Outback, and then you fire up the flux capacitor, you slap on the wombat slap bracelet, and you go all the way back to the Australian Outback. And you get the previously on, and it tells you absolutely everything you needed to know in order to just like walk right in to episode two. At least that was my experience. I wonder what the experience would be like to somebody who did not know yet what an Australian Outback season of Survivor was.
Yeah.
But for somebody who where that season is so vividly imprinted on me, because that's the first full season I watched, I very much remember its connection to the Super Bowl. And I very much remember that feeling of, come on, let's get going. Let's get the show started. I do not remember who a Kerry Collins or the Ravens, what any of that is.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that I was just like, this is boring. Let's go. And I remember this being because I had watched the Borneo finale and now I was hooked and I was ready to go, being like really hyped and really amped up for a full season of Survivor to like watch it, alongside my friends in the live weekly, tradition. This was like at the time when they had all of like they would have like a huge mainstream media push behind Survivor, behind cast announcements, behind cast reveals. It's the first time I had a winner pick going into a season. And that winner pick, as I'm sure I've revealed, and I'm sure as many of these takes will either be full repeats of things that I've said in the evolution of strategy, or hard to explain deviations.
Yeah.
Also a possibility. But as I explained in the evolution of strategy, I'm sure that my very first ever Survivor winner pick was Cal.
Cal.
And so here we are, not quite week two, but episode two of the season, 5 days after the premiere. And Josh Wigler gets an early lesson as a Survivor fan in Survivor heartbreak.
Okay. All right. And so we're going to do things a little bit differently here today, whereas last week we kind of bounced around. I think that what we want to do is open this up to people who, if you did not go back and rewatch this episode, we're going to hold your hand through this a little bit more and take you through scene by scene of what's going on so we can talk about that. And I think that that's probably a better and more organized way to talk about what's going on. And of course, and if you like what you hear today, you'd like to hear maybe between 5 and 6 hours of discussion about Survivor to the Australian Outback, check out evolutionstrategy.com. You can hear the first chapter for free, the second chapter for just $2.99, and it goes on from there. Listen to Josh and I on a 300-hour journey. The first season, 30 seasons of Survivor. All right. So, Josh, we open up on Kucha Tribe, day four. Also, let me just also, for people who... that I want to just put this out here. I feel like that we cannot discuss the events of this episode without discussing the person who is prominently featured on the Kucha Tribe. His name is Mike Scoopin. He has a lot of other stuff that goes on in his future.
Yeah.
But we are really just focusing on Mike Scoopin of the Survivor of the Australian Outback.
We're like... sort of early Earl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is what we're calling it.
Yeah.
We're not yet too late, Larry.
Not yet too late, Larry. And ironically, he has a lot of conflict here with Jeff Varner. So if you don't want
to
hear...
this is my first time going back to the Australian Outback since we recorded the evolution of strategy and since certain things have transpired. It was a curious experience watching, like, oh, that person.
Yep.
oh, that person too. Australian Outback, maybe a little bit of a cursed zone as far as Survivor
the Kucha Tribe
is concerned.
Kucha Tribe. Okay. All right. But look,
some stuff there.
We're just going to, if you don't want to hear about that, I totally understand. We'll see you
completely.
For our episode next week. Be sure to check out everything else that we're doing on RHAP. Okay. Just putting that out there. But we're going to start off in the Kucha Tribe. And right off the bat, we have Mike Scoopin, who has, throughout his time on Survivor, we do learn that the guy loves to eat.
He does, doesn't he?
Legendary eater, bottomless pit of a stomach for Mike Scoopin, where in Survivor Philippines, I think on Tandang, I think he was eating the rice without even cooking it.
Yeah, I remember that. That sounds right to me.
Yeah.
I remember him having a famous interaction with a coconut, though I don't recall if he ate it
or just got his head smashed into it. Bonked in the head with it.
Got it.
Stuck to Abby Maria's machete. And then,
I believe he ate dirt at one point, right? When he was in that big mud challenge with Penner.
Yeah.
When it was Calabaw versus Tandang.
Mm-hmm. Right. So here is Mike Scoopin, and he is going to, basically, everybody's sleeping. He's going to put the rice on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's going to make really mushy rice that no one asked for.
This is
no
an episode.
No one asked for this.
Josh, all about the proper cooking of rice. This could have been a Top Chef roundtable podcast. This episode is 80% focused on how to cook rice.
Yeah, well, we often say on the Top Chef judges table at reality TV wrap-ups, which we record and release on Saturdays, that on Top Chef, you typically don't want to make like a risotto, because a risotto takes a very long time to make, and these challenges on Top Chef typically don't have the amount of time that allots for the proper cookery of risotto. Whereas on Survivor, you've got nothing but time. I feel like you could make some decent risotto out there, but maybe you don't have like the right fluids to do it. And so instead, you just let it boil with like the swamp water and it just becomes swamp water glue rice, which does sound awful.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible. You didn't have rice, right?
I did in All Stars.
But not in Amazon.
What did you have in Amazon?
We
had manioc.
Yeah, manioc. So you don't...
You couldn't overcook it. You didn't boil it like a soup. Yeah.
Could you eat like a soupy, gluey rice, or would that have been a non-starter for you? Oh, that's how you enjoy
it. Yeah, that's good.
You like it goopy.
Yeah,
you
like it's like goopy oatmeal. Rice. I like that. It's like gruel. I feel like it lasts longer.
Please, sir, may I have some more?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Anyway, so Mike Scoopin does like a weird move where he's like, everybody's sleeping. He makes the rice and then he leaves and then he comes back like, did somebody cook rice? All right, I'm hungry. I'll eat.
No one's happy about it. Everyone's mad about it. I think another thing that follows Mike Scoopin in his Survivor career is that people have a lot of problems with his camp behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about his banana etiquette, but his rice etiquette is no good. His shelter etiquette apparently is going to be problematic at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And then even some like leadership etiquette in this episode.
Yeah. He says he basically knows better than everybody here. He is basically saying like, I am a student of nutrition.
Dr. Mike?
Yeah. Here. Listen. This is okay. This is...
I'm a student of nutrition, and I know what this is doing to my body.
Okay.
Wow, is that like Dr. Mike with like a few like decibels, like additionally? Is that like the masked Renapper, but with like you're altering Dr. Mike's voice?
A little bit.
Wow.
Mike's a student of nutrition, but he does have a game plan in that he is going to be the provider. That's what he wants to do here. That's basically going to be his ticket to these people don't realize it, but I want to feed them. And then once they have that feeling of being full, then they will come to appreciate Mike Scoopin.
Yeah, I love how he's trying to like get out from under this shadow of, I guess, at the first tribal council, everyone's like, yeah, Mike's the leader. And so Mike's like, all right, well, I guess if I'm going to be the leader then. And now he doesn't want to be the leader. He wants to be the hunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The tip of the cap to a Survivor character we may be discussing at some point in the not too distant future.
Okay. Meanwhile, on Ogacor. Okay, we see that a little bit of Cal is struggling, that he too is trying to be the provider, coming up with nothing, though.
Yeah, Kel coming up empty. This really is, it's a tale of two fishing expeditions, one of which is going to be successful in the case of Mike Scoopin, one of which is not going to be successful. But Kel is persistent. He's nothing if not persistent, and he's really hell-bent on going solo.
Yeah,
he's taking like the big canoe out all by himself. He's like, well, I haven't gotten anything, and it doesn't look like I'm gonna, but I'm gonna keep trying. Damn it,
Josh. In light of what we're about to talk about with Kel, do you feel like did Kel want a lot of alone time?
Yeah, because he was just like ridding his pockets of beef jerky. He had sewed so much beef jerky into the fabric of his pants that he needed to be gone for 8 hours at a time per day to eat all the jerky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jerry just caught him at the very end of that jerky journey.
Colby has no patience for Kel and his fishing.
I feel like I feel bad for Kel here on the rewatch.
Yeah.
I feel like Kel strikes me as like really sweet guy, shy, doesn't really know how to fit in. Everybody seems to have like fairly nice things to say for him at the very end, and he seems to have like very nice words for everybody else at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand why everybody couldn't make nice here.
I don't know. Maybe they just thought he was too shady. Maybe he kept like disappearing.
Or maybe they really were visually confused where they're like, but Jeff Probst is the host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He can't be both the host and on our tribe.
Well, tell people what you're talking about. If
Kel looks like Jeff Probst. Kel has, you know, back in the day of old school Survivor, like they had costume changes. They mm-hmm. had wardrobe changes. Their clothing hadn't been stolen yet by the proverbial Survivor gods. They had freaking sunglasses. Mm-hmm. They had sunblock. That was just like caked on their face. There's one shot of Kel with like seven layers of sunblock on his face, I feel like. And one of his wardrobe changes is he's got a blue denim shirt and khaki shorts, and he looks exactly like Jeff Probst. And I don't have enough of a memory of Borneo to recall whether or not Jeff had dressed that way yet. And if not, did he just like beat up Kel and take his clothes after Kel got voted out? And that's his wardrobe for the rest of Survivor.
Yeah, if you look at my Twitter from today, I tweeted out a picture of Kel being voted out, and it's a very funny side by side where
they're dressed identically.
They're just identical.
How did no one tell Probst like this, dude? This is awkward, but like you're gonna have to change your clothes. He's like, why do I have to change? Well, Kel's only got two costumes. Change your clothes, Jeff. And then somebody responded to your tweet with like the two Spider-Men pointing at each other, which was immediately what came to my mind when I was watching the episode too.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that. But Kel, I think, is an underrated piece of Survivor history, fashion icon. Mm-hmm. Jeff Probst owes so much to Kel Gleason.
Yeah. Do you feel like that was...
I feel like he conspired to get Kel voted out. Yeah. I think he snuck the beef jerky into Kel's pocket so that Kel could get voted out. So he set him up as the fall guy.
That Kel Gleason is so hot right now.
He's so hot right now.
Take his identity.
He needed blue steel.
Take his look.
He blue stole Kel's clothes.
Josh, I was really struck by how much one person in particular really stole the show for me. One of my longtime favorites, and that would be Marilyn Mad Dog Hershey. She's got a ton of great lines here in this episode.
Oh, should we have taken our teeth out before we started recording?
Yes.
Or is it not too late?
It's not optimal for podcasting.
Yeah, it'd be worse.
You know, you need the teeth to pronounce some of the letters. But here is Mad Dog Hershey talking about what kind of day it's going to be for Ogacore.
There's a time to be energized, and there's a time to just chill out. So we're going to the family whirlpool.
Oh, and then that great music comes in.
Yeah.
That better be a wand off this week. Rob, Marilyn Mad Dog Hershey, a constellation, of course.
Yeah, she's great.
I feel like when we were doing the evolution of strategy in the early going, it's really not until Wanda shows up that she fries our brains and drives us insane.
Yeah.
And then like the rest of the evolution of strategy is really crazy from that point forward. But at the point in time that we're recording those first 10 chapters, we haven't lost our minds yet. We're still eyes are on the prize. We're still like keeping in mind that this is supposed to mostly be about strategy and less about like coming up with ridiculous impressions that will last throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we went back and did it now and did like a reexamination of the early chapters to get it on the level of craziness that future chapters are on,
yeah,
we might have like a weekly segment on RHAP that is about Mad Dog, or at least a recurring joke of like taking the teeth out. Like that would be like the new version of like spilling the tea.
Yes.
Well, let me take my teeth out and tell you how I really feel.
Don't think I didn't text T-Bird and say, T-Bird.
Yes. Good.
Get me Marilyn Mad Dog Hershey. She told me I already requested her. She was already on my initial list of people that I wanted. But this is a great opportunity to tell people to check out my interview with Tom Westman from
So fun. Robin T-Bird talking to Tom Westman, who I had felt like I had heard, like, never really wanted to talk about Survivor again, like, kind of, like, close that chapter. And he talks about that even to an extent that, like, you know, he's moved on with his life. But the way that he's talking about Survivor in over the course of the interview, really, really, really great listen. I was listening to it this morning. I was so happy. I was smiling ear to ear to hear from Tom Westman again.
And just as an aside, to go back to where you started, that I actually went back and listened to TEOS Palau to get ready to talk to Tom Westman. And let me just say that you eventually get on board, but at the introduction of Wanda, that you don't seem like you're loving Wanda in the introduction of Palau.
Yeah, no, that is very well known, I feel like. Or at least it should be. I certainly know that as a big piece of my Wanda origin story. Because I come into that chapter, like, we're about to close out the first volume, and I'm like, I'm a little tired, and Palau's not a season that I'd seen a lot. I think I'd seen it, like, once or maybe twice before that. And like, I just didn't have a lot of love in my heart for the Wanda of it all. And it's really you who convinces me to take a look at the good Wanda Shirk in a different light. And I think it's your persistence that creates Truck 108 and mythologizes Wanda.
Yeah.
I think
there's a moment in it. You run with it.
There's a moment where I break. And I don't think we've ever really glued me back together.
You completely switch sides and go all in. Okay.
Yeah. All right. That tends to be how I live my life.
Josh, this is a episode, two iconic challenges in this episode. Our reward challenge is the famous Butch Cassidy challenge, where we're going to see our Survivor competitors jump off of a waterfall. Do you know the height check? 70 feet?
Is that right? Was it 70 feet?
I don't know. I feel like that number stands out in my head.
I jumped off of a lifeguard tower at summer camp once. It was like 9 feet. That was really terrifying. So I don't think that I could do 70 feet. I think I would be, you know, good on Roger for eventually doing it.
Yeah, because it's not even he can't swim. I would be more afraid of the jump. He
the
seems
jump
more
would
afraid
scare
by
me.
The what happens at next.
Especially in a world where the horror movie Midsommar has now been released, and like jumping off a cliff, spoiler alert, is a really big piece of that movie. Yikes. And it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
Is that
it's
a dream?
Unflinching daytime nightmare. That's all I could think about. I was like, Roger, don't jump. Yeah. And he does. And I would have been horrified. I would have, no way. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Nuh-uh. Not for me. Not for me.
How did the Butch Cassidy challenge hold up for you?
So this is a good opportunity, I think, to talk about some of the things that are present in old school Survivor that are missing from modern day Survivor that I think, without even being the old man at the edge of the driveway yelling at the kids on the street to go back to their houses, I think are productive things to go back and look at, like what was working and what was good dramatic fuel. I think that's something that like plays on fear, the way that the Butch Cassidy challenge plays on fear. I think even more specifically, the gross food challenge and like the narratives that play out and how that interacts with some of the like the tribal dynamics in that. You know, the backs and forth there and Kimmy's whole dilemma. But also like a lot of like the luxury item stuff. How Kella's going to basically like try to buy some goodwill with his razors at one point. Why don't we just have that stuff? Why aren't we giving survivors more props? I mean, we're giving them like game props, like utensils in the game, but that's it's the Australian Survivor to take it to, you know, to the place where this season takes place. It's the Australian Survivor thing of like, why go with an idol nullifier when a jar of cookies is going to build you the drama that you need?
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of that's here, aside from the wardrobe changes.
This is a really great point. And it's something that I was listening to that if you don't mind, Josh, I want to talk Big Brother momentarily.
That's fine. Totally fine.
Taryn Armstrong and Mary Kwiatkowski, they have been doing a Big Brother 4 blockumentary. I did the first two blockumentaries with Taryn. We talked about Big Brother 2, Big Brother 3, a la TEOS. Yep. Mary and Taryn, they are releasing it week by week in our Big Brother podcast feed. People should definitely check it out. They're talking about how back in Big Brother 4, in these early days of Big Brother, even though that there was, like, the episodes were the same amount of time, you really felt like you got to know the characters better because there was a lot more segments about the personalities of the characters and, you know, less about what's going on with, like, these different things about the game, which ultimately are sort of just, you know, they come and go, but you can really remember a lot of these characteristics of these people that we saw on television 20 years ago because we're learning about people and characters. And I think it's just a, you know, something that they did really well in the beginning and something that all of these shows have gotten away from.
Yes, I think so. And I think, like, I was meditating on that a little bit today, and one of the things that I thought of is, you know, certainly Big Brother takes place in the same location every year, right? Like, it's the Big Brother house. Survivor now basically takes place in the same location every year. We don't know what the future holds. Some sort of Western backdrop.
Presumably, yeah.
Fingers crossed. I think that's a piece of it that it's like, they're like... Even just like the sheer act of creating the show anymore requires some measure of sacrifice. So we're not getting like the big, like, globe trotting worldview that Survivor once brought. But I don't know why that means we can't like have more like people's stuff than than the game's stuff. Like, even Tom was saying on the podcast with you, to spoil a segment from that, when he was asked about Winners at War, and apparently he wasn't even called for Winners at War, which is a nightmare, like Midsummer in the Cliff. That's a whole other rant to get into on another time. But he was even talking about how, like, he doesn't love the Edge of Extinction stuff, and he's glad that he played an old school Survivor, but he understands that Survivor needs to have all this new stuff in order to keep it interesting. I just don't know if that's true. I think like you could probably throw in a rogue beef jerky gate or a Snickers bar or have a bunch of people sitting around in a whirlpool with Oakleys on or have somebody trying to like save his life in the game by offering up his razors to the tribe. I think that would probably work. I think that would still be good.
All right.
Anyway, Butch Cassidy is legendary and great, and I didn't talk about it.
Yeah, it was weird. You know, we don't really have the omnipresent narration from Jeff. I do find that it is a little harder to follow what's going on in the challenges. Jeff is eventually going to find his place in terms of what he should be saying during these challenges. Swimming issues for Roger is going to hold Kuchatry back. Ogacor is going to win this one. But Josh, it was so odd that, so basically in this challenge that they had to jump off the water, the ledge, and then into the water, get a like heavy trunk out of the water and bring it to a platform. And then
in the Pioneer Town that is a hopefully a tip of the cap to the Western season that we're coming up
for Butch Cassidy. Hey, yeah. And so then they bring the sunken treasure chest to the platform. And then it was very unusual to then not open that chest and then put together a puzzle. Like, it was just like,
right. Yeah. Like, just literally drop this on the platform.
Move this heavy object. And then that was the end of the challenge. And even like
I loved that.
You loved it.
I did. I loved it. I thought that was great because you know what? That buys us more time back at camp with the people. And like, you don't need to do some sort of great act of physical, you know, some great feat of physical strength followed by some sort of massive puzzle thing that like negates like the bit, like jumping off the cliff is the action
that
movie
was the
scene.
Thing. Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And then get us back and like, let's see what some of the psychological ramifications of that are.
It was just a reward anyway. Well, what was the reward? Fishing gear?
It was blankets. There's blankets. There were blankets in the case, and Jeff goes, okay, and if you win, you get the blankets that are inside the chest. And so they open up the chest, and it looked like the blankets were wet to me.
Yeah.
Like,
wet blanket.
I don't want to dig in any deeper into that.
Okay. All right. Josh, let's go back to life at Ogacor because guess what? They're having issues with the rice also.
Yeah. This is Keith Famey, the famed Keith Famey.
Yep.
Best burns in the business, or lack thereof. And he is not cooking the rice to the tribe's liking. So we gotta call in the titan of tortillas, Jerry Manthe, to step up to the plate. I love Jerry. Jerry's so great in this episode.
Jerry's great.
Unbelievable.
That Keith is also very fun to watch in terms of, like, that he is able to, like, grit through his teeth and say things that you know he definitely
he does
doesn't
not
mean
at all. Like, lying straight to the producers, like, no, I'm thrilled that Jerry made the tortilla. I'm not burning with fury inside at all.
Look, anytime you can come out to Survivor
and
somebody
eat, that's
else
great.
It, can just,
you know,
completely tarnish your reputation and your profession that you've done your entire life, and then say that they're better than you and you stink at what you do for a living. I mean, like,
that's great. Now, excuse me while
I'm a team player.
Write and sing a song and steal Mitch Olson's job.
Yeah.
Keith was clearly furious, but he really tries to just, like, suffer through it.
Yeah.
And the tortilla looked good.
It
really did look good.
So basically, the rice stinks. Jerry's plan is that they had some flour for some reason. I don't really know why they gave them flour.
Because give people stuff. Give people stuff. Give people flour to make tortillas.
Kucha tribe never seems to get into their flour. Jerry
Monsters.
Makes the flour and water, and she makes tortillas. And it is a big hit around the camp. Here is the signature catchphrase of the winner of Survivor All-Stars getting to try the tortilla.
Oh, oh my God. It is so good.
Yes.
I can't hear that without thinking of Paul and the Survivor historians who really make a meal out of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's funny. Amber, we haven't even talked about her yet.
Yeah.
She's the player that we've seen most recently from this crew.
Yeah. We get the young 21-year-old Amber. Fun to have her on the TV screen.
And she has a
She's
great
so
moment.
Nice.
She has a great moment. She's like, I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but Keith's rice tastes like bullshit. You know, she has like one moment where she's like, I really don't want to disrespect the guy. I know that he's a chef. It's his job. Keith's rice is not good.
Not great.
It's actively bad.
Also, Josh, I don't know if we talked about this before. Keith has a very unique look too on Survivor. I feel like he's got a t-shirt like that's tucked in to like Cavaricci pants. Like he's very overdressed with his khakis.
He's also wearing like the khaki button-down shirt and pants, much like Jeff is wearing when he's not wearing Kel's clothes. So maybe it was like Jeff had to make a choice of which of these two men does he have to rig the game against, because he's going to be looking like one of them the whole way through.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided he likes the blue shirt better. But otherwise, Keith looks a lot like the full khaki look that Jeff is also sporting.
Yeah. He also, I think, is one of the first people. He does also a thing where he does like baseball cap, but like buff mullet. Like, I don't think anybody else has really done that look before.
Buff mullet?
Yeah, like, basically, I wish I had a buff right here. So, wears a baseball cap,
and then he has
buff sticking out the back of its business in the front.
Yes,
buff
in the back.
Buff party in the back. Yeah.
Buff party in the back. Yeah, I don't think that we see buff mullet too often. I think we got to bring back. All right, so somebody who's listening to this, who's going to be on the delayed season 41 or 42,
bring back buff the buff mullet.
If you bring back the buff mullet, then like any like bad words we've been saying about you on the podcast, we will immediately take.
What's
back.
With that buff mullet? Mullet went out of style in the 70s.
I don't even like that.
I don't even
buff
like
mullet.
A mullet.
Yeah, yeah, buff mullet. Shamble could have done buff mullet.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to the Kucha tribe, because that Mike has successfully caught some fish, brought it back. That even though in catching the fish, he has still irritated the other Kucha tribe members who are talking about how, like, when Jeff Varner has a famous confessional, talks about how when the Mike catches a fish, people have to make a big deal about it. Angels have to sing.
Yeah. That comes later in the podcast.
Yes. Okay.
The singing happens later.
Um, Josh, our Mike Scoopin is going to say grace before they eat the meal of fish. Are you okay with hearing Mike's prayer?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, okay. I heard it today when I watched the thing.
Okay. Here is Mike's prayer, which does not go over great with the Kucha tribe before they eat this the gift of fishes that Mike Scoopin has given them a fishy.
Dear God, you know I said a lot of prayers today, and you answered them with fish for us, and I'm so happy to be able to provide fish for the troops. I know that this could easily get turned around in some way to make me be the leader of the tribe, but this meal is from the bottom of my heart. It makes me so happy to be able to provide for everybody here, so thanks for that.
I know this might make me the leader.
Yeah.
What a smooth way of getting the leader target off your back. I don't know. It's like he's been thinking for days.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I got to have this conversation about how I don't want to be the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then like everyone's like, oh, so Mike thinks he's the leader now. It's like it's so awkward.
Yeah.
It's phrased so awkwardly.
Yeah.
It's so uncomfortable. And it has the exact opposite desired impact.
Yeah. Kimmy zings him pretty good in her confessional after that.
Mike thanks God for making him the leader of the tribe. I don't know when he was anointed, but apparently my back was turned at that moment.
It's a great Kimmy episode also.
Yeah, this is a huge Kimmy episode. And definitely the first time we've gone back to watching Kimmy while thinking that that her return was a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have those numbers in front of us of how many people from this season of Survivor have returned to the show? Is it half the cast?
I think it might be half the cast.
I feel like it is at least half the cast.
Mm-hmm.
If not slightly more.
I mean, Tina.
Quick, yeah,
Colby, Tina. Just going working backwards.
Yeah.
And then...
Amber,
Mike, Varner,
Amber, Jerry, Alicia, Varner, Scoopin, Kimmy. So that's it's eight. It's a full half of the cast.
Did we get
the
eight? I have seven.
You got Kimmy. You've got Scoopin. You've got Varner. You've got Jerry. You've got Amber.
Oh, Jerry,
you've got
Colby.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think. Yeah, I don't know.
Eight is 16.
Is it eight? Okay.
Yeah. All right. How about a season of Brand Steel, the people that came back from Australia versus the people that haven't come back from Australia?
That's actually a really good idea.
Yeah. Although,
except for the fact that almost everybody from this season has been canceled.
Yeah.
That part is challenging. But other than that, I think it's a great idea. Yeah.
I'm so in awe of Kimmy Kappenberg here that as a, 21-year-old person watching this show to see a person from Long Island out there.
Ronkonkoma.
Really, this is very exciting to see Kimmy Kappenberg.
Yeah, yeah. Big episode for Kimmy Caps.
Yeah. Okay. Then, all right, let's get into it, Josh. The coup de grace here today, the Coup de Gras. Let's talk about what's going on at the Ogacore camp.
I am very disappointed. What happened 5 minutes ago? Jerry reported to the rest of us that she had seen Cal chewing a brown substance, what she thought was beef jerky.
What happened? Did production miss this? Like, this happens in the first season also. Like, is the coverage not yet there where we're hearing about, you wouldn't believe what just happened?
Yeah, but I think maybe also if they show it, then it's an admission of their own blind spots in the security
department.
Yeah, but
even she's talking about like, oh, Jerry just came back here and was like, shouldn't we see
right,
that?
Right, but if we don't see it, then we,
I'm not even talking about the beef jerky, but we can't even see with Jerry's conversation.
Well, would you rather see that or would you rather hear Marilyn Mad Dog Hershey say, I just heard the
you
most
won't believe what
you
I
will
just,
not
what just
believe
happened.
The most disturbing news. Cal has apparently been eating some brown stuff. He smushed it in his mouth, and Jerry said that cow was eaten.
But, you know, when she talks about how, oh, the most disturbing thing just happened, it's not that there is Cal is eating beef jerky, a.k.a. Kel. It's that he has been wrongfully accused,
right,
and charged and prosecuted without, you know, getting his fair day in court.
Yeah,
she there's been no like, due process for Cal.
She hates cancel culture. She does not like that Cal is getting canceled from OgaCore without any say in the matter.
Cancel culture. Cancel culture.
We're trying. Cancel culture. You know? We're trying. You tried. We all tried. There's a moment where it's Tina, Amber, and Jerry who are rifling through Cal's backpack. And, you know, if one thing goes a little bit differently, there is a possibility that that scene is three Survivor winners going through Cal's backpack.
I mean, this is the first time that somebody's bag gets rummaged through. Not for a hidden immunity idol here, but does he have a surplus of beef jerky on his person?
You know, as we were talking about, you know, the like a back to basics type of season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last week we suggested, like, is there something where you could do? And you were saying, like, I think you'd still need to have the idols. And I'm kind of the mind of like, well, let's see what it looks like without them. Let's just try it. That might be more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What if you go into the woods and your instincts right now on a season like this are still that you're going to go and you're going to find an idol if you go searching for an idol. But instead, you find like a pack of Slim Jims.
Ooh.
And now people are going to watch you eating Slim Jims, like sneaking off with Slim Jims.
So you're saying instead of hiding the idol,
yeah,
hide food in the jungle.
Or a different thing, or like a cell phone, you know?
Okay. All right.
Or like an iPad that has games on it,
mm-hmm.
and you can go off into the jungle and you can play. And like maybe everyone who finds an advantage, one of their advantages is like, hey, so this season there aren't advantages of the types that you're used to with idols and stuff. We got candy.
Mm-hmm.
We got candy this season. And if you want to eat more candy than everybody else, then you can go out into the jungle and find the Butterfingers or the Slim Jims.
Yeah.
And that would be what people are finding when they're searching through your bag. Like, I think that Jerry has an idol. And then they go through.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, she's got Captain Crunch.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they basically do this on the Edge of Extinction, but with peanut butter this past season?
Yeah, but just make it like the real show.
Yeah.
Make it the actual game. And I think that they're close. I think that they're close.
Maybe they just got to merge those things. But they didn't use any of that in the show.
The Edge of Extinction stuff is like very much a lot of what this is about, like in terms of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like hide the beef jerky.
It did make
people
really fight with each other. And I wish we would have seen more of it.
Find out.
I wish that they would have put it on All Access and we could have gotten a better sense of what was going on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The hidden immunity bunch of crunch. Like, who knows? Like, there's a refrigerator out there.
Oh.
There's a hidden refrigerator in the jungle.
Yeah.
You know they can do that.
Josh, Cal has overheard the hubbub. And
so uncomfortable.
He comes charging back in. Hey, okay, okay, okay. All right. I heard some conversation that I have beef jerky. Just want to...
That's not a thing.
No, that didn't happen.
It's what you saw was grass. It was like brown grass. It's like, yeah, just a piece of grass. And they're like, how do you know that it was not toxic? And that's like where everyone's mind immediately goes, or at least that's like the things that they're not talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if you ate poisoned grass?
Yeah.
Now, it's like, it just looked like grass.
This is probably a good time to stop down and talk about this. It's been debated for many years. Did Kel have the beef jerky? Did Kel not have the beef jerky? What was going on there? And I think he has always said he did not have any sort of foreign substance. But, it has been, if you talk to those people from the OgaCore tribes, Tina, Amber, Jerry, Mitchell... those people,
And you're talking to them regularly, right? You're on a WhatsApp thread with them and Akiva.
I have talked to them about this in the past. And, you know, I've definitely, you know, talked to Mitchell about it, talked to Amber about it. They all say...
He maintained he had beef jerky.
He definitely had it. In the Evolution of Strategy, we talked about how... and I listened to this piece from the Evolution of Strategy, but I did not go back and rewatch. In the DVD commentary you have, I believe, it's Amber and Tina talking about how that they firmly believe that he had this. Maybe did he have... beef jerky sewn into articles of clothing to be able to open up and then take
absolutely.
Out?
Absolutely. Yeah. That absolutely makes sense, because then that also clarifies why Jeff wanted those clothes so bad. He wanted to get to the jerky.
Yeah. So I think that it definitely, I think, has a lot of legs. And if it's in the official DVD commentary, I feel like that's canon. To me.
Yeah, you know, I think it's like, it's still up for interpretation. There is still some wiggle room on the matter. I think at the time, I feel like maybe...
Give Cal the due process.
I think it's possible that I didn't firmly believe that Cal had the beef jerky. Yeah. That I wanted to believe in my original winner pick.
Yeah.
But as time has gone on since, certainly,
I thought he got a raw deal in the first viewing.
Yeah, I think that's how I felt. I think I may have felt that way when we recorded TEOS, but I was a young lad back then, naive to the ways of Survivor treachery.
Okay,
I now fully believe that he had the beef jerky,
Josh.
Whether or not he sewed it in, maybe production sewed the jerky into his pants as like a, this could be interesting. Let's see what he does.
So he comes and he's defending himself, and after he feels like, no, you got the wrong guy. That's definitely not what happened. he has a little bit of a make good that he offers to the Ogacore crew.
And that also brings up another point, and I was going to do this later on tonight. I know during the competition you guys were talking about your faces were getting scruffy, and the girls were talking about wanting to shave their legs. I've got three blades out here. The girls can use one blade, the guys can use the other blade. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Wow. So he's got discount codes for blade?
Yeah. Not blades of grass. Three blades. Yeah. He's got three blades. Do you think that gave Colby the idea of three blades? Boy, that sounds like a hell of a razor. What about four blades? Call it quattro.
Was he a quattro spokesperson?
I think he was. Colby Donaldson. Got four blades in one.
Yeah, so he had to get
one
voted
way
out.
To shave. That's full tilt.
Yeah, that's four tilts. He had to get Kel voted out then. So that there could only be one representative of the razor. This is ingenious. They tell Kel, like, all right, all will be forgiven if you give us the razors. Then they vote him out, and they've got his razors.
Yeah.
This is actually very smart. Colby is a secretly pretty clever guy out there on the Survivor.
Yeah. Got a friend over at Schick. Gonna tell him about what I just saw here today. Josh, Jerry feels like this is an admission of guilt on Kel's part to offer the razor blades. Do you buy that?
I mean, the whole thing is deeply uncomfortable. The way that he kind of just like rushes, he like charges right into the tent. He disrupts the full flow of the conversation. It feels to me, the way that the conversation plays out, also like the position that Kel is in, he's like crouched down. With like in a very uncomfortable crouch that I don't feel like you could comfortably sustain for much longer than like 4 minutes feels and that feels long to me. Then again, I have the body of a man who's been quarantined for 3 months and was already rather unfit before that, so that feels like an eternity to me to crouch for that long. But it feels like that conversation must have been fast, and so like he came in, disputes the jerky, and then quickly offers up, hey, by the way, I've got three blades. And is it a threat, too? Is it like a thinly veiled threat?
If you don't drop this, I'm not going to give you the blades?
Yeah, but by the way, just in case you're thinking of crossing me, I've got three blades.
No, no. He's not a violent man.
Yeah. He's okay. just in case.
Beef jerky gate was huge, Josh. Dominated the national conversation. It was a better time in 2001.
Yeah, that was a controversy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah.
That was nice. That was nice.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, I think, you know, talked about, like, you go to the you know, newspapers, the front page of any news site.
You were in college at this point?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. 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 I was in high school. I think it was like early high school at this point. And yeah, I remember like the crew that
news.
I would talk to Survivor was like, yeah, the beef jerky. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely a thing.
Yeah. I mean, this is pre 9/11. This is like, yeah. You know, very, very important news in the world. Okay. Yeah. All right. So
this doesn't even last like 2 minutes in the modern news cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that happens, the episode ends, and immediately
next
nothing.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gone.
So, Josh, Marilyn is really not happy with how things have gone at the Yoga Core tribe. She feels like that things have really escalated.
Gee whiz, 4 days, things are heating up at our encampment.
Our encampment!
Gee whiz!
Gee whiz, I can't believe what's going on with Kyle! I gotta take my teeth out, I'm so upset!
Gee whiz!
Gee whiz!
He's up in our carpet!
His crazy face also at the end of that.
I love Mad Dog. Unbelievable.
I'm so angry she gets voted out in the next episode. I know,
was terrible.
Like,
terrible.
So mad when she got voted out. It's like, she's great. What are you doing?
I know. It was a bad choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We have our immunity challenge coming up, and we find out it's going to be gross food, and this does not sit well with the great Kimmy Kappenberg.
She doesn't eat meat, and she won't eat an amphibian. She won't eat any land-dwelling animals, and she says these are her morals. She's not going to sacrifice them. And Alicia is like, oh, you come into the game with morals. It's a big, big mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is Kimmy able to eat insect? Is that the one loophole where is an insect an... I know it's an animal.
I'm not getting into this
with
you.
But Kimmy doesn't seem to have a problem. She's like, when it's a worm, she's like, I can eat a worm, I can eat a worm,
she can eat a worm.
I can eat a worm.
She can eat a worm. She can eat a worm. That's fine.
Is she saying, I can do this? Or is she saying like, oh, I am able to do this.
I am permitted to in my moral code to eat the worm.
Yeah, I won't eat fish, I won't eat animal, I can't eat a mammal, but is an insect.
Right. You know? But if it's a cow brain, that's too far.
She would not even indulge the idea of eating the cow brain. But the worm, I can eat a worm. I have to ask Kimmy Kappenberg one day.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would like to know the answer to that.
All right. Josh, we're going to put the gross food challenge on a wheel here. I love to put things on a wheel.
You do. This is one of your favorite things.
Yeah, we have a number of assorted items on the wheel. And then we also have a couple of like freebies. They got an apple slice. We've got...
Yeah, the apple slice is like... It's a really browned apple slice.
Yeah.
So, like, it's got, like, you know, the air contact. It's been oxidized.
But better than a mud well or a mangrove worm.
I don't know. I haven't had a mangrove worm.
Josh, can I say that retroactively, I think the wheel was rigged.
Really?
I think it was fixed.
Really? You think the fix was in?
Nothing came up twice.
Nothing came up.
Everything came up once.
I would bet that they spin the wheel, and then if they have like an unaired rule where they are like, okay, well, if it lands on the same thing again, we're going to re-spin it. Once it hits a thing, we're not doing it again.
I mean, how many times did they have to re-spin when they got to the eighth thing and it was Tina versus Scoopin' for the one thing that hasn't come up yet?
Probably a lot. Probably a few times. Probably, but where?
I don't know.
What else do they have to do?
Listen, I know about wheels. I think that the wheel, a different item that. What
this
is
sounds
math
like a confession. This sounds like a confession.
No, because
oh yeah,
no, that's
Did
not
you
true.
You have the
it
beef
would,
jerky.
It would be if we had the same exact wheel And then 10 episodes in a row, and a different thing came up every single time. Mathematically, very improbable.
Yeah, they just edited that out. They just edited it out of the show. You need to see that? You don't need to see that.
So when it's Roger versus Colby, they're going to spin it over and over again until either the candy bar or the tripe comes up?
Yeah.
Eh, I think it was fishy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Maybe.
So
how would they do it? What's
like
the device?
I don't even know. I don't even know. Okay.
Remote control?
It beats me.
But I really enjoyed the way that Jeff described all the food.
Yeah. Well, how did he describe it?
Well, just like the casual, he's like, yeah, so this is a beetle larva. That's gonna be a moth someday.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like it's not because they're about to kill it with their mouths and stomachs.
Couple of highlights here. We have a first round matchup. Marilyn versus Mike Scoopin and
Mangrove worm.
Okay, here's Mad Dog. I don't know about you. If I'm about to eat something gross, I think I'd want teeth in. Here's Mad Dog's strategy.
What are you taking out?
I'm ready.
You're taking out your teeth. Mad Dog is just taking out her teeth.
I appreciate him narrating that for audio purposes. That was very helpful. We don't have to tell you what she just did. Jeff just did. Teeth are out. We call that an intentional me hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey,
Jeff, if you were to eat a worm, would you want teeth or not?
I think if I have the option, if I have removable teeth, which I suppose we all do, but if I have teeth that, if I have false teeth. That I can like take in and take out, and that is what my tooth situation is, then I think I'm taking them out for the worm.
Yeah.
Because I think I want to have less spots where the worm can get caught and I have to think about that.
Oh, yeah, you get a worm stuck in your teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
so if I
smart.
Have fewer teeth to get the worm stuck in, I do think I'll opt for that if I have fake teeth that I can take out of my mouth.
Okay.
But I don't currently. I will someday.
Josh, any highlights of the gross food before we get to the climactic matchup?
I mean, I think that the chocolate bars really do look quite good.
I ain't no Hershey bar.
But I'll eat this one. Is it a Snickers?
It looked like a makeshift Snickers.
It looked sort of like a... is it a Mars bar?
I never heard of
it. Or is it a Milky Way?
Milky Way. I'm surprised it wasn't just like a... It might have been frozen when they put it on there.
It looks nougaty and caramely, so I would, a frozen Milky Way.
Yeah.
And just like a small sliver. That's one thing that, like, back in the day, at the very least, to Survivor's credit now, when they give you a reward, they give you the supersized, like, flat-out pizza tower buffet, which is gross, but it's a large quantity of stuff. Mm-hmm. Here, they just, like, you have, like an inch-long candy bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not enough.
Not full
it's
tilt.
Not enough. It's not full tilt.
Yeah, fun size. Okay. We get some intriguing matchups along the way. Alicia versus Amber with the grasshopper. Alicia eats the grasshopper. She's like a machine. She's just like very like robotic and angrily eats the grasshopper. Yeah. Amber takes her time with it. But, she looks like she's going to puke. Two of my tribe mates going head to head there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They were so bonded about, what was more annoying, that time we ate the grasshopper or Rob's sister Nino?
Oh, yeah, and it turned out to be you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that say?
Okay. Tina is going to be the weak link for Ogacore. She cannot eat the tripe, aka cow stomach. She calls it a cow intestine later on.
Yeah, the tripe is a delicacy in many places.
Yeah, it looks fine. Tina, like somebody else I played with, Boston Rob, I've spent time with both these people. Another fussy eater.
Uh-huh. Got it. Okay. So this doesn't surprise you.
He was not
surprised. You could probably write a book on the eating habits of survivors.
I've eaten a lot of meals with survivors.
Yeah. You had like the Blazers on steak dinner with Fair Play.
Yep. Yep.
I'm sure you've had, other lunches, meals with people.
Sure. Sure.
Steven Fishback, you could probably weigh in on how he eats.
Yeah. He's a real aficionado for, he wants like the best pancakes, best tacos.
Fishback.
Yeah.
We went out to dinner once and he got a lamb burger and he said, that's my shit.
Lamburger?
The Lamburger looked great. He made a good, it is a good order. He made a very good order that day.
Was that a direct quote, Josh?
What?
What Steven said about the Lamburger?
That's my shit?
Yeah.
I believe he said something along those lines, if I'm remembering right. Yeah. I think he said something close to that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We come down to
meal.
We have to pick a champion to fight in the tiebreak round. Going to eat the mangrove worm. Kimmy versus Tina. Kimmy, who would not eat. Tina, who could not eat. In this battle, Kimmy, she sees it. As I've said, I can eat a worm. I can eat a worm. She houses that worm.
So in the spirit of you and Stephen
Fishback.
In
the spirit of the Summer Olympics.
Yeah. Let's break down the strategy here. Does Ogacore choose correctly in putting Kimmy up against Tina? I feel like they probably do because no one else showed any notable weakness.
Yeah. But
they had to bank on the fact that it was going to be a food item that Kimmy was morally opposed to.
I think that was the right call.
Yeah. I guess they don't have any evidence that anyone else is going to struggle.
I mean, this is kind of like what, you know, if you listen to Johnny Fairplay talk about in Survivor Pearl Islands when they were upset with Michelle about that she was supposed to be the person who's like, oh, I can't do it. I can't do it. Like, you want to, like, in round one, feign I can't do it. So you get picked for the tiebreaker and then you can do it. Like, I think that that's a good strategy in this, that you want to have one person as, and I don't know if it was because of the worm or I don't know if Kimmy psyched herself up, but you want to have the one person to,
it's you Uncle know. Phil playing pool. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey, bring me Lucille.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. Back at camp, boy, Josh, we really yada yada the who's going home.
And it doesn't really, there's like in the run up to it and at tribal council, Kel is not even really a candidate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm glad that Survivor's storytelling has evolved to the point where at least the votes, like, sometimes they don't make sense. Yeah. But often, like, you at least know who's like, Who's in?
Well, we've come full circle. We've gone from like almost like we're like, wait, what the hell is going on? We have almost no idea. To then we had like a point where we really knew what was happening, and we got back to the point where so much is going on, we have no idea.
Yeah, but what's funny too is that in this season. Or in this episode, rather, so Kel is not even really discussed as an option. It's about like a Keith and Jerry split, basically, right? Like, that's what people seem to be saying back at camp. And then at tribal council, like, Jeff's really going after Tina. Like, did you let him down? And Tina's like, yeah, and they should vote me out. And that's like not anything that has really been talked about. This episode being Tina's first episode where she has confessionals, by the way, the dog that did not bark. As I believe she was known in the first episode for her winner edit, and then the mad dog that does misspell Kel and writes down Cal on her ballot. It's like the first time you're like, oh, okay, so Kel's name is in consideration here.
Yeah,
and then she makes a Suhawk reference.
Yeah, here it is. Know? Here's a Maryland's vote.
Cal, if you were lying in the Simpson Desert, dying of thirst, every single one of us would give you a drink of water. Good luck to you.
Now,
kind of feels like Rick Devens has been borrowing Mad Dog's cadence, right? Like, you're
Cal,
getting play.
You're being played.
Cal, yeah.
It's going to be a hot one at the old encampment tonight.
Yeah, and we've seen Rick Devens enjoy a whirlpool, the mud spa. So
that's true.
But she votes Cal.
C-A-L.
She writes down C-A-L.
Yeah.
And then they start to reveal the Kel votes, and it's a shutout. It's a 7-1 vote. But the Cal vote doesn't even come up until like the final vote. So like when like it's ominous and like you've hit four votes.
Yeah.
And so the options now are either a tie or Kel's going home. But Kel is now definitely going home because they haven't flipped over the Cal.
Not to mention then the deciding vote, the killing vote, is the misspelled Cal vote.
It's Cal.
like I would say, Jeff, not me. That's not me.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm Kel.
I was thinking that too.
I'm Kel.
This could have been like a pre-Denver Diva situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the vote.
But it's Kel. That's the vote. And he goes home. And then there's the iconic moment where Kel and Jeff Probst are the same person next to each other.
Like, oh, and I can't believe you wore that. Oh, that's so embarrassing.
And if this was Time Cop and they touched, then they would have melted into one
Jeff has his shirt entity. Untucked, Josh. Do you think that Jeff has his shirt tucked in and then saw Kel and then just like... untucked
his
shirt.
Yeah, he didn't need a mirror. He's like, oh, I got this. I can't look like that.
Yeah, I wonder, does Jeff ever do a tucked-in shirt? I feel like he has, like, the shirts that are, like, sort of, like, the untuck-it length shirts where... this shirt seems long that's untucked. I wonder if he has those shirts that are tailored to be worn untucked.
I feel like a missed opportunity for... Michelle Fitzgerald in Survivor Winners at War to have not said, I needed this immunity like Kel needed a denim shirt and khakis.
Kel.
In an alternate timeline, you know, when we're talking about like who could be the next host of Survivor, it's easy. It's Kel. They dressed the exact same. No one would notice.
Okay.
No one would even know.
Get him ready to go. Kel Gleason. Okay, that he's got those razor blades. Jeff Probst says, we've never seen Jeff with any stubble whatsoever in 20 seasons. Does he have three blades?
I would love to see Jeff with a beard.
Come in with a beard, quarantine beard. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Seems like he's still shaving in quarantine based on like the videos during the Winners of War season. Maybe now that that's all done, like he actually has like a huge beard now. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, okay. All right.
That'd be crazy. Can you imagine Jeff Probst showing up on day one of a season with a huge beard and everybody be like, whoa!
Yeah, people would be psyched.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'd be cool. It'd be dope.
All right, Josh. Let's start to head towards the wand off for this episode of Survivor. But first, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode. Those are our friends over at Hunt a Killer. Hunt a Killer is an incredible game that you can play. It's perfect for a time when there's not as many things to do outside of the house. It's the escape room that you play in your own home. If you're looking for clues and solving puzzles, you can bring the mystery home to you. With Hunt a Killer. It's a monthly subscription game where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. You're like a mad dog Hershey trying to uncover the evidence of, is this person wrongfully accused? Is what they're saying true about this person? Each month you'll receive crime scene photos, evidence, motive, and suspect information that you'll need to solve a crime. It's so interactive and convincing that it looks and feels real, from newspaper clippings to clothing left at the crime scene. You can investigate it for beef jerky. And if you think it's easy, think again. You'll be racking your brain to try to solve the mystery and anxiously awaiting the next box of clues. I've gotten to play Hunt a Killer. I've heard from a number of our listeners and patrons that they've played it, that people really have enjoyed it. I've heard a lot of praise for Hunt a Killer. It's perfect to play solo during date night or with friends for a game night. So you can swap theories. You can even join their online community and work with other people who are at the same point the story with you. Over 60,000 people have joined the Hunt a Killer online community, and they have over 1,000 five-star customer reviews. That you wait until you get to see all of the clues and the different things. That it's really, really fun to open up and hold these objects in your hand. You'll be looking up things on the internet. It's very, very fun to do. Look, if you enjoyed Escape the Pod recently on Rob Nick Evening Podcast, this is for you.
This is the thing. This is the follow-up.
Yeah, no milk bag required. Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/Rob for 20% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/Rob for 20% off your first box. huntakiller.com/Rob. See if you have what it takes to get inside the mind of a serial killer and solve the mystery. And Josh, let's go ahead and go back through time to do the wand off.
Stop right there. You want to know right now. Before you go any further, this is Wanda. You're in my arena if you need to. You can straight up leave here. It would make me so happy for the rest of my life if you'd shut the shirk up and just eat your damn rice. It's the wand off. It's the wand off forever if you need to. You can straight up leave here, but it'll make you so happy for the rest of your life if you turn the songs up and turn out to be nice. You ought to know right now. Before you go any further, it's the wand off. It'll be here forever.
One off season.
The by far for me best part of the Tom Westman podcast is when you told Tom Westman vaguely what the wand off was, and he chuckled for about half a second and sped right along. Moved right along from there. It's like, well, that sounds weird.
Yeah, maybe you had no follow-ups or anything.
Maybe shouldn't have agreed to do this podcast. That seems strange.
Yeah, okay.
That seems odd.
Last week, Josh, we went back to Borneo, episode one, season one, the Survivor premiere. We have our top three this wand-off season to allow people to vote on. In third place, with 11.22% of the vote, it was Lana and Anthony with Exposition.
Yes.
In second place, it was Dan from Colorado with the Pagong song.
Yes.
And our runaway winner with 52% of the vote, it was the Four Patricks with their barbershop quartet version of the Sonia Christopher classic, Bye Bye Blues.
Quarantine's got me feeling blue, but Wanda gets me through. So I'm telling all my blues goodbye. Bye bye. Blues, thanks to Wiggler. Bye bye, blues. Give me Rob.
Yes.
So yes.
Okay.
Do you think that Kel took his blades from the barbershop quartet?
Oh, yeah.
It's possible, right?
Hey, four barbers. So that's a perfect.
Yeah, that's a perfect for the quattro. Oh, man. Well, I don't know about blades, but this season on the Wand Off, you're competing for those Wiggler's Wombat slap bracelets.
Yes, because you guys make a bop that slaps. And so
you make a bop that slaps. You slap your hand with the slap bracelet, and you, too, can travel through time. Allegedly. That's not actual feature.
Yes.
So we're working on those.
You're Mark McVary.
We're actually working on those. We should have some of those pretty soon.
Okay. All right. Let's bring in the host of the Wand Off season. Here he is, the great Casey Kasem.
Rob, it is a pleasure to be back to talk with you about episodes of Survivor that I got to see with my own eyes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, quickly, Rob, do you notice something in Casey's... Did he just smush something up in his mouth? Casey eating? Can Casey do that?
Josh, it's none of your business what I put in my mouth.
That is for sure.
Let's go ahead and get the party started here with our honorable mentions all about episode 2 of Survivor, the Australian Outback. Of course, you can send in your wand-offs all week at wandoff at robinsonwebsite.com.
We're a little rusty.
Here's DJ Figueroa McNichol and Nick Fishman to kick things off.
Gross food's coming up, so you gotta eat weird stuff now. Ogakora's been on a winning streak. They all want to dominate Kucha every week. Kimmy's vegetarian, she doesn't do meat. That cow's brain has a stench, is it the smell of defeat? Tina sucks, she just has to consume her plate. Uh-oh, she is gagging, and that's not super great.
That is from Pink Underwear of the Specialist.
It was like the pink like headgear thing that Elizabeth and Kimmy had.
Yes, her immunity headdress.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's right. That's right.
Josh, next up, we have Brian and Jackie, who were moved by the religious prayer that one Survivor contestant made in this week's episode.
Oh,
here's
God.
Brian and Jackie.
Scooping makes rise too soon. Everyone gets mad at him. He must redeem himself, so he brings fish home. Mike says a prayer. Varner doesn't seem to care. Mike says the troops will feed, but does not want to lead. Disappointed. Kimmy asks who anointed. Mike says a prayer. The angels sing in trumpets blare.
Mike says a prayer to make aware of all the things he's done.
He's done, yeah.
words like no. Prayer, but they just say
well, just
his words make all them stuff.
Told you the angels sing later.
That was from the amazing pop artist Mad Dogga.
A great mental image. I just imagine Mad Dog voguing.
Next up, we've got Lyndall from Tasmania to talk about some of the alternative food choices to mushy rice at Ogacore.
Mixing dough in the outback sun for tortillas. Jerry's taking his place. He's a chef. He's a chef back home, and yet whenever he makes rice, it's always too wet. Tortillas. I wouldn't have thought that you'd hit the spot for me daily. Oh, tortilla, you're better than rice. You're tasting so nice in my mouth. In my mouth.
That was from Simonica Edgar.
Yes, yeah, it was. Yeah, that's correct. Spectacular.
Josh, next up, here comes James.
You know that apparently Keith is not a restaurateur anymore, and he's in production these days.
Yeah, I did know that.
I didn't.
Wonder what happened.
It's gotten to documentary.
Yeah. Josh, next up is James from Canada to talk about the woman leading the charge against Cal.
Jerry's so suspicious, 'cause she's been watching Cal. Jerry's so suspicious of jerky in his mouth. Tina's one mad lady, 'cause Cal didn't eat no grass. But if you search one more bag, then Mad Dog will kick your ass.
Ouch.
Oh, he don't catch no fish, he don't make no friends, he gon' suffer. Ow! Cal is going home today.
That was from Stevie Wonder. Josh, we learned a lot about the second boot of Survivor, the Australian Outback, this week. Of course, to honor him further, here is who? Here's a Horton.
He doesn't catch a fish. His twine is always a mess. If you catch him eating, he won't confess. But he's eating jerky. He makes tortillas all day. Wait, that's Jerry, but anyway. He doesn't care a thing about that jerky. Jerry saw him eating. Meet Kel Gleason. He never confesses, loves jerky and hiding it, says he was just chewing some grass. Ain't that just too bad? Meet Kel Gleason.
That was from the band Ty Train.
Man, I love Ty Train.
And our final honorable mention of the week comes to us from Kristen Y to talk about how Kimmy felt in this week's immunity challenge.
You got cow brain there. The good news is it's pretty fresh. Should have a nice taste to it.
All I can see is people
There's two types of larva poo, but there's a brain. Mammal brain.
It's a mammal.
We all saw Marilyn take out her teeth today. Whoa, it took all the boys' breath away.
Oh, my.
I only wish I could escape.
That was from Blindfold Melon.
Mm-hmm. That's triggering for you. I'm sorry.
Don't like it. Don't like blindfold challenges.
Do you think, are you surprised that we haven't seen a Survivor Braun versus Beauty versus Cow Breen season yet?
Smart.
Yeah.
Maybe. Hey, keep it in the hopper.
Should we Brant Steele Survivor Cowboy versus Cowboys versus Cow Brains?
Keep that one on the back burner. We still got a lot of Brant Steeles to do.
File the request to Mike's tattoo, all that stuff. let's hustle up on that one.
Yeah, we got to get that one going.
The world really needs it right now. We really green need light that podcast green light pretty that badly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to talk to Mike soon. Okay.
All right, cool. Great.
Josh, let's get into our final three for week number two. Kicking things off here is a pair that had an up and down roller coaster ride throughout season 40. It's Nick Fishman and Aaron Robertson to talk about the big reward challenge this week.
Gmail is calling. Apparently, we're falling over a surprisingly large cliff. Roger's fear makes him meek, but it isn't daunting as the Ravens' Super Bowl defense this week. Camera lingers on his face as Kucha is losing the blanket race. But he made the leap, and while it was steep, he descended down, and he did not drown. After he made the leap, that was really steep, he got to the creek, but by then it was too late, it was too late.
I never did watch Butch Cassidy. I wonder if he had a fire with Bitch.
Kucha was behind, seemingly the whole time, risking life for blanket seems unfair. Though not as bad as that movie Gladiator, hope that doesn't win Best Picture this year. What if Roger was a saboteur since the mole premiered the same month as Survivor? But he made the leap that was really steep, so I guess he's legit and was never gonna quit. Roger made the leap and managed to keep his head above water. Now if it applied to fire, your head out of the fire, that would change the entire show.
That was from the band Some Season 41.
Oh, I love Some Season 41. I've seen it because of time travel. So,
how is it? Did it come out okay?
Yeah, the Wild West theme is really cool. Like, you'd think it's very goofy, but they actually really did
they pulled
it, up
it off.
Well. Yeah,
stuck
they did.
The landing.
Yeah.
Josh, the second song in this week's final three is all about what Cal was hiding. Here is Kevin the Canuck.
Cal, we think that you've done wrong, and we don't see you here for long. If you can't change what we believe, we'll take you out like Mad Dog's teeth. Tell me if you've been sneaking food. If you have, then you're kind of screwed, 'cause we don't just think that you were eating grass. We found out your jerky little secret. We'll tell everyone you somehow smuggled in a meat stick. You thought that you could sneak it. Your jerky little secret. You have to go.
Amazing.
It was from the band The All American Reamjacks. Dude.
That's so lame.
So lame. If you had jerky on the edge, what?
Screw you, Cal.
You went through Cal's bag. It's so lame.
Mad Dog versus Ream.
I think Mad Dog and Ream would be on the same page.
On fire together. Yeah. Be awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Our number three song here in this week's final three comes to us from Dan from Colorado to talk about the woman who makes tortillas and looks for jerky. Here's Dan from Colorado.
Voting out Cal tonight.
I think Cal is a liar and a cheat.
That was from the 4E seasons.
The week 4E, just a couple weeks away.
Or as I like to call them, the quattro seasons. It's quattro season. Four blades in one. Go shave full tilt.
We've definitely talked about this before. It's one of the things that has gone through my Swiss cheese brain. I've lost it over the course of...
We talked about this before?
I'm sure we have. I'm sure we have.
I feel like I was doing new material. This is best stuff?
No, I feel like we've done it, but I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember anything. It took out more than my teeth. It took out my cow brains, too.
My cow brains.
Oh, that's the season.
Yeah.
Cowboys versus cowboy versus cow brains versus cow brains.
That's it.
That's the season.
You nailed it.
Got it.
Full tilt.
It's a four tribe. Quattro tribes.
Four tribes in one. I ain't no Hershey bar. Okay.
It's Maryland Mad Dog Hershey to be voted out the following week, which we will not be witnesses for. No. We have to go hop back in the DeLorean and travel to another period of time before we have to witness that tragedy.
Okay. All right. Josh, do you want to throw out what will we talk about next week?
Yeah. All right. So let's punch it in. Let's pull up the odometer. Do you punch it into an odometer? I don't think you punch it into an odometer. What is it? All right. Yeah. Rev it back up. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Punching it in. And let's see where we're going. And it's Survivor Marquesas episode 3.
Yes. Whoa.
Survivor season 4.
Are all of the episodes on like some gross food wheel, or do we have a time traveling didgeridoo?
I think we now have we use our wombats slap bracelets and they slap on, and then we get like showered in this bright blue light that sounds like a didgeridoo.
Yeah. This sounds like a didgeridoo. That's like the quantum leap noise of
noise that our DeLorean makes.
I like the idea that our time travel was powered through like we have to blow like a large gust of wind into it, a didgeridoo.
Yeah, I like that too. I think as we go, we could be building the time travel device. So far, it involves a slap bracelet and a didgeridoo. Yeah. And what
so it just makes a didgeridoo sound.
Yeah. Well, let's keep that. That's good.
Okay. All right.
That's probably worth keeping.
All right. Add it to the soundboard.
Survivor season 4, episode 3. We're all skipping right. season 3, episode 3.
Watch out, Hunter.
Yeah, with respect to Dr. Carl.
You better be ready.
I'm coming for you, Hunter.
I think a momentous vote in Survivor history. Like, this is the guy who you go after at the merge. You don't go after this guy in the pre-merge, and here goes Hunter Ellis. And yeah. No stranger to commercial life himself.
Yeah. Got four, it's quattro light.
Quattro light.
Okay, all right. Josh, why don't you tell everybody what you're up to?
We've got Poster Recaps is still happening. We've got the Everything is Super podcast. Kevin Mahadeo and I are going through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're currently up to Captain America, the Winter Soldier. We're recording that tomorrow, Tuesday, for a Wednesday release. And then Mike Bloom and I on the Lost podcast on Down the Hatch, we are up to Two for the Road. Iconic episode of Lost. I Shall Say No More. It's a season two episode. And it's got Michelle Rodriguez in it. And some things happen. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody who's never seen Lost. But it's a big one.
Big one. Okay.
Big one. So we've got that going on over at Post Show Recap. So make sure you're subscribed and check out those podcasts.
Josh, this was great fun today. I really enjoyed this. I feel like that we found the format for this.
This is great.
And can't wait to fire up these slap bracelets next week.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And we actually have them coming, so that's going to be fun. That'll be great.
Keep sending us in your wand-offs for next week. Marquesas, Season 4, Episode 3, coming up next week. Of course, a ton of Rob Nakibnita podcasts in these last couple days, including a Brant Steele, Stands versus Ops, for you Survivor fans out there.
Ooh.
Check that out, plus Rob Nakiba or Pointless, Tom Westman interview, trying to work on figuring out some other stuff for the second half of this week. As soon as I get some firm answers, I'll let you guys know what we're up to next. But in the meantime,
talking with T-Bird, with Mad Dog, with Cal.
We have another good Talking with T-Bird lined up for not this week, the week after. So I'm very excited about that as well. But patrons, check your email for the week 2 SoundCloud playlist. And until next time, take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Quarantine's got me feeling blue, but Wanda gets me through, so I'm telling all my blues goodbye. Bye-bye, blues, thanks to Wiggler. Bye-bye, blues, give me Rob. Sonia's queen, so I sing. Sun is shining, no more whining. Earth is screwed, but the wand off gets me through. Life is hell, but I'm swell. Bye bye, blues.
Bum 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 bye.
Bye bye. Bye 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 to those blues. Bye 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 to those blues. Rewatch my favorite show and let the music flow. Sonia singing first blue queen. Bye 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 to those blues. Bye. Bye-bye to those blues. Isolation makes me sad, but the wand off is very rad. Bye-bye to those blues.